The following podcast is brought to you by the new AT&T.
Hello, and welcome to the official Lost podcast for the upcoming episode, Par Avion. In today's installment, we'll catch up with co-executive producer Gene Higgins. Gene is the on-site producer in Hawaii who keeps the show together, from making sure the craft services have fresh pastries to coordinating the construction of last season's fabled hatch. First up, though, we have a few words from a man who would win any staring contest hands down, actor Michael Emerson. He plays everyone's favorite baddie, Benry, a.k.a. Henry Gale, a.k.a. Ben Linus. And at the end of the podcast, we have a sneak peek from next week's episode, Par Avion, which airs Wednesday, March 14th from 10 to 11 p.m., and then the next day on ABC.com.
I've already given you a ticket off this island, Jack. What's it going to cost me this time?
Right now, your people are in a room deciding whether or not to execute Juliet. You're gonna stop it.
Juliet doesn't care about you, Jack. Doesn't matter what she's done. No matter what you think. She's one of us.
The crew is not fearful of me. I think they like me. They're always very friendly to me. But they are also a very respectful crew as well. And I think if they see if I have this certain kind of a faraway look in my eye, that they just don't talk to me as much as they might otherwise do. The reaction I get on the street from fans has been sort of consistently formal and fearful, I think. But it's fearful with a hint of delight in it. You know, like the TSA lady at the airport goes, "Oh, you, I hate you. Oh, you," but she's trying to, you know, she wants to touch me also. So I think people are delighted to be frightened, and they like the people that can scare them.
Have you ever given any of the fans on the street the look, that blank evil Ben look?
No, because I think that would just start something. I'm clocked out.
Classically trained, Michael Emerson has appeared in numerous Broadway productions. Still, the one playwright he keeps coming back to is Shakespeare. My guess on his favorite play? Macbeth. All of this led us to ask him, what exactly is it about Ben that he enjoys playing the most?
I think the feeling of danger that permeates any scene that he participates in, or any place he is, there seems to be a charged subtext and something going on, something that should make everyone pay attention and beware.
Hey. Hey, come on. Hey, move. Let's move. Hey, come on. Let's move it.
Did you just kill that bunny?
I'm hoping that I don't have to work with bunnies ever again, because bunnies look so innocent and the audience feels so tenderly about them that you can seem nothing but beastly to be mean to them. And yet this bunny was mean to me. The bunny wouldn't play the scene with me. Nothing I did fazed the bunny. You'd have thought that the bunny would have died of terror, as he was supposed to do fictionally. But the bunny was unfazed, didn't even blink. There was nothing I could do to get a reaction out of the bunny. It was a very difficult scene work.
Your heart's not going to blow up, James. The only thing we put inside you was doubt. Oh, the watch is a heart rate monitor, but nothing more.
Look. We gave him a sedative, not a pacemaker.
How do I know that's the same bunny? That you can just paint an eight on another one?
You don't.
O'Ban always has more cards than you think. He's always... I mean, haven't we seen that? That's almost his trademark, is that he's a step or two ahead or a layer or two deeper than anyone else that's playing the game.
Of course, every card game needs a dealer, and that's where our next guest comes in. Co-executive producer Gene Higgins has been with the show since day one.
Hi, this is Gene Higgins. I am the co-executive producer for Lost. What does that really mean? Because there's a lot of producers. I am the producer who is in charge of all the logistics and the budget and essentially the nuts and bolts side, the hard side of turning the scripts into the shows. So that means that I receive a script from the writers. We break it down. We talk about all the various elements. We bring in all the department heads. We discuss it. We discuss it, of course, with my partner in crime here, Jack Bender, who is in charge of all the creative aspects. And Jack and I, over the last three seasons, have found that we're a really good blend. So Jack will discuss the logistics with me, and I sometimes discuss creative with Jack. And it makes for a very good marriage. And I think between the two of us, we bring a pretty good show to the screen.
I guess right now we'll talk about your day-to-day responsibilities and maybe at what point you received the scripts. Like, kind of take us through if there is a typical day-to-day.
Okay. Normal day for me starts between 6 and 6:30 in the morning, which is about the same time that the crew starts. I stay at the set till we get first shot, which is probably somewhere between 7:30 and 8, make it back to the office, go through all the morning's paperwork. Let's assume it's a day like today where we get an outline for an episode, so you sit down and you read the outline because that tells you what's going to be in the script that's coming, which is for the next show. So at any given time, we have 1 to 2 shows in various stages of prepping. One far out, one prepping to shoot next, the show shooting, and roughly 3 shows in post-production. So you have to keep track of all 5 or 6 shows at the same time. With regard to reading the outlines, we're very lucky in that we have terrific writers, and the outlines are very true to the scripts that come down the pike afterwards. So we can read an outline and go, okay, we're going to have to build a set for this. We need to find a new location for that. This looks like it requires a crane. Let's make sure we put it on hold. This we need to generate some video playback for if we've got a machine working or a television working. Sort of all the bits and pieces, the big signposts that need more prep time, you can get going on. I talk with casting to make sure that we've got, if they're recurring characters, that usually we have a heads up from the writers when they're first doing it. We put them on hold. But I call casting and say, okay, these are the actors that are going to be in the next script. Let's make sure that we put them on hold. As we get closer, we work out a schedule. We book the actors. I would say that quite a few of them come from the mainland. We have some very nice actors here in Hawaii, but the pool of actors is small, and especially in terms of the Koreans, for example, because we're shooting a Korean episode right now, we've pretty much used up everybody. Mm-hmm. So we can't have the same woman who played Jai Lee's mother playing another part. It would be just too confusing. So we're tending to go a little further afield for actors now.
I see. And regarding the Korean scenes, flashbacks for Jin and Sun, how do you make Hawaii look like Korea?
Well, for many of our flashbacks, not just Korea, we use what we call matte paintings so that we change the background. We'll put up a blue screen or a green screen, depending on what it is, and we will replace, for example, yesterday we had a skyline that was non-existent, but when you see the scene, when the audience sees the scene, that skyline will be all Korean buildings with Korean signage.
So what happens if you get sick or want to take a vacation? Do you get to do that?
You ask if I get sick or take a vacation.
Yeah.
I don't get sick. Getting sick is not allowed in the film business. Truly. What happens is if you get a cold or you tend to get the flu, it's really when you go on hiatus and the adrenaline level sort of diminishes in your body and you tend to relax, and all of a sudden that's when you get sick. I don't get sick during a season. I am a great believer in mind over matter, and it just doesn't happen.
Okay.
So other people can get sick. I don't get sick. There's too much in my head. Even though I will tell you, I have a phrase that I use with my assistant all the time. I make sure that she has copies or she knows the backup of everything. And I say, okay, this is for the proverbial, if I get hit by the truck, somebody needs to know this. So I always make sure that I'm backed up.
Gotcha. So you have a team of people that you work with that
yes.
could, if something were to happen.
They would always know where it is.
Yeah. So in general, how does the show change from outline to script to completion? You were saying that there isn't much difference between outline and script.
From outline to script is very seamless. It's really quite wonderful. It just gets better. From the script to the show is really the challenge, because a lot of times they'll write things where I would say more often than not when I get an outline, I'll go, oh, my God, they want us to do this. And it's we pull it off. I'm a great believer in that the way to not work is to say, no, we can't do this. And the creative way is to figure out a way to say, yes, we will figure this out. I would say snow in Buffalo being shot in Honolulu was one of the better ones. That was sort of fun because we had to sit down and go, where do we get that quantity of snow and what can we use that looks like Buffalo, New York? And our location manager, who is fabulous, found us these brick buildings, which you could sell as, you know, a piece of New York street. And then we got to thinking, well, where do we find quantities of ice like this with snow? So we all realize we're sitting here. It's a major port. Ports have refrigerator ships, and refrigerator ships require ice. So we sort of found the company that makes all the shaved ice. And in reality, it cost more for the dump trucks than it did for the ice, the dump trucks to haul it to location. So we did about 10 or 12 dump trucks full of snow cone ice, essentially, and dumped it on the street.
That's awesome. Has there ever been a situation where you scrambled, you really came through for this scene, and then it got cut from the final episode?
Oh, yeah, that happens, because you always want sometimes we scramble to do a scene, and then it does get cut from the episode. But you always want a little more footage than you're going to use for the final end product, because you want to be able to take the best of the best and say, oh, there was a scene, and while it's a great scene, it's not maybe that germane, or the show plays tighter, or the performances are better if that's a delete. So, yeah, unfortunately, there's some great stuff that hits the cutting room floor, but we all think it's the better stuff that stays in the show.
Mm-hmm.
One of the scenes that happened for that would be the finale at year one, where the pilot who got snatched by the monster out of the cockpit, we brought back for a flashback at the airport. It was a terrific scene, and Greg is a terrific actor, and he's gone on to do wonderful work in another series. But it just, time-wise, it just didn't fit in the show, and poor Greg ended up on the cutting room floor for that.
So how many different locations would you say that you use?
You know, we have never counted how many locations we use. We do have a number of jungles that are sort of film-friendly, belong to the city and county of Honolulu or the state of Hawaii. And that, of course, is always somewhat easier than private enterprise. Because if it's private enterprise, people have a business they're trying to do at the same time, and we are disruptive to businesses. But what I think one of the most wonderful things that we have here is the Kamehameha Schools, which is a large foundation, agreed to let us use 500 acres of their property as a back lot, essentially. And so we have the beach encampment. We have a large area of jungle. We have an area that we call the savanna because it's sort of more wide open. We have tide pools. We have little coves. It's a great area. So when we have two companies shooting, we can actually run two companies out of that one back lot. It's terrific. And they've been wonderful with us.
What would you say is the strangest location that you've used?
One of the strangest locations that we have used would be on the backside of Diamond Head are some old World War I bunkers and a plaza area where they used to have, oh, God, what did the guy tell me? They were like 20-meter cannons. The cannons are no longer there, but the bunkers, because they were built into the rock of the mountainside, we used this whole area for Iraq, which that was one of the ones when we went, oh, my gosh, how do we do Iraq on a tropical island? Because Iraq is basically a desert landscape. And we found this old military area, and it's literally cement, rectangular cement tunnels into the mountain where these people lived. It was sort of cool because the captain's bunker had these little insets where they would put the lanterns for some light, and he actually had a fireplace, and the other bunkers didn't have those things. They were just for the enlisted guys.
Wow.
But with a combination of that location and then going in and doing matte paintings around the exterior shots, we eliminated the mountains and created the flatness of the desert of Iraq. And there we were, Iraq and Honolulu.
The others on their island, and then the island where our losties live, are they actually close in proximity, the two locations?
The others on their island, their experimentation island, if you will, where the cages were, that was a jungle that was actually fairly close to Honolulu. That's about 15 minutes from our production offices. The others' sort of neighborhood, if you will, is about as far as you can get from our studio and our offices, on the opposite corner of the island. And it in itself is about a half an hour's move distant from the beach encampment where our survivors lived. But then you have the rocky area that you see sometimes, which is 10 minutes to the east of us. So we really do utilize the entire island. There are very few areas where we just don't shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just because the writers haven't written us something that needs something in that part yet.
So the people of Oahu have gotten used to seeing you guys all over the place.
I think so. They're really the tourists that get excited when they see. I know. Even the locals sometimes. Funny story, I took my son for a regular doctor's appointment on Saturday, and he happened to have a lost T-shirt on, and a guy in the waiting room just went ballistic because it was like, oh, my God, did you see that? He had a lost shirt on. And I'm thinking, he's my 17-year-old son, and he's still in high school.
So that was a good, fun story. Do you have any fun on-set stories that you could share with our listeners about working on Lost?
Oh, working on Lost is just great. The set, the crew are just great. They are the nicest guys. I'm going to put a plug in real quick for a couple of our guys. I don't know if anybody really knows it, but, you know, we had first and second place at the Pipeline International Surf Festival. Are both Lost crew members. But one of the funny things that happened yesterday is our camera operators have changed. The one we had needed to go home and see family, and we have a new one, and his name is Bobby. But we already have a sound mixer by the name of Bobby. So we were trying to figure out, yesterday being the first day, how to differentiate them. Now, remember, we're shooting a Korean episode right now, so my Korean translator is on the set. And he's sitting right in front of the sound mixer. And the sound mixer says, well, at home, they call me Bobo. So why don't you guys call me Bobo and call him Bobby? And the Korean translator turns around and says, is your wife Korean? And he says, no, why do you ask? And he says, because Bobo means stupid in Korean.
Essentially,
he was asking us to call him stupid and didn't know it. But then who would know how many languages, you know?
Right. Oh, gosh. Well, now he's going to be suspicious of his wife, actually, knowing Korean.
No, she's not Korean.
Well, thank you so much for giving us your time today. I know your time is precious, and we really appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks,
take care,
Jane.
Guys.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to another edition of the official Lost podcast hosted by ABC.com. Join us again next week as we sit down with actress Emily DeRavin. Here now is a clip from next week's episode, Par Avion. That episode airs Wednesday, March 14th from 10 to 11 p.m. only on ABC.
Okay, here we are. Here we are. Not bad, eh?
Not bad at all.
But you'll take your seat. We will begin with our first course, which is cereal. We have fresh fruit salad.
Good morning.
And morning yourself. What brings you down to the beach, Desmond?
Boar running, Fake. I was hoping you might want to join me in the hunt.
Oh, well, thanks for the invite, but as you can see, we're just about to begin a picnic.
Well, I think hunting might be a better way to spend your day, Charlie. I mean, of all the things you could choose to do today, hunting with me might be your best option.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
What is it?
I think I know how to get us off this island.
This is for Mac McKinney. Mac, your chance has passed to play professional ball, but you can live vicariously through Vince Young's rookie year. You've obviously seen how he plays. Now see how he lives with AT&T Home Turf. Just go online to attblueroom.com/sports for exclusive access into your favorite athletes' worlds. See inside Vince's home and check out the AT&T technology that keeps him connected. So that's Mac's world. For everyone who's not Mac, if we can deliver his favorite quarterback to him, we've got what it takes to deliver your favorite athletes to you. The new AT&T. Your world delivered.